sorry, sir, you can't go in there.
Yeah, but I've got an appointment with the dentist in 5 minutes.
Sorry, sir, no one's allowed in.
Look, I've got 2 fillings that really need seeing to.
So is the dentist, sir.
In the Chair by Mark Taverner, starring Michael Williams, Harry Foster and Hugh Laurie.
Just one or two more, Gav.
Your horse. I wish you'd leave things alone.
Right, all done.
2 bullet wounds, Gav. Just like the last one. This brings it up to 4, doesn't it?
Yeah. Basildon, Plymouth. This is the second one in London. Do you think there's any significance to this being in Hammersmith?
I suspect the significance lies with the identity of the victim.
Well, he's just a West London dentist.
He can't be just a West London dentist, can he? Remember our theory, Frank. Every one of these murders has some sort of link with the government.
That's your theory, George, not mine. As far as I'm concerned, what we're looking for here is a common or garden mass murdering git.
What are you doing?
Looking through his appointments book. You may have noticed our killer doesn't seem to have left us a message. Yes, he does. Look at that.
There should be wailing and gnashing of teeth.
Can we remove the body now, Gov?
Yeah, all right. Come on, George, you're in the way.
Excuse me, are you the officer in charge?
Yes, madam. This is Miss Pope, the receptionist, George. She found the body.
I don't suppose your boss was involved in politics at all.
George, this is no time for that sort of nonsense.
No, that's all right. As a matter of fact, he was. He was branch secretary of his local Labour Party.
Sticking to the spending limits we inherited was a manifesto commitment. The increased dental charges are simply part of that.
But we're cutting services for ordinary working people and their families.
No labour nonsense.
I think our colleagues are right, Jim. Ordinary working people went out with the 1970s.
Can I just say that 84% of focus group interviewees are in favour of reforming the welfare state?
Exactly.
But 95% said they're only in favour if it doesn't mean cutting any services.
Which is precisely what I'm saying.
And that is entirely consistent with New Labour's message. We will always protect the weak and the poor because that is what we were elected to do.
Well, thank God for that.
But we will not shirk from the hard choices, the tough decisions which only New Labour can take.
Yeah.
Good point. I'm glad we got that settled.
Kenny, before we get to financial strategy, can I just put an extra item on the agenda?
Of course.
Some of you may have read about some homicidal maniac murdering dentists. On the radio this morning, I heard a scandalous suggestion that the murders are in some sense linked to the strategy of New Labour.
Utterly ridiculous.
I've instructed the Rapid Rebuttal Unit to issue a statement saying this is a malicious fabrication by the BBC. Are we all agreed?
Here, in the West Indies, England's morale is high. Confidence is high, the temperature is high, the West Indian road is high. This is Max Parker saying hi from Barbados.
Oh, God, get rid of it.
Our special sports correspondent, Max Parker. Now we're going back to Hammersmith in West London, where earlier today a dentist was found murdered. For the latest, we join our reporter, George Cragg.
Behind me, police officers are removing the body of Dr. Gregory Gilbert, the Hammersmith dentist, who early this morning became the fourth victim of the so-called dentist killer. Like the last victim, Sir Ewan Carmichael, Dr. Gilbert was shot at close range. Dr. Gilbert was a local Labour Party official. In fact, every one of the killer's victims so far has had some connection with the Labour Party. This is George Cragg in West London.
Meanwhile, divisions are growing inside the Labour Party over the government's welfare reforms. Our political correspondent, Nicola Ellis, spoke to the Deputy Prime Minister, Jim Hardy.
Deputy Prime Minister, do you accept that spending on the health service is out of control?
You listen to me, young lady. You probably don't remember Nye Bevan, but it was Nye Bevan, and he said the Tories were vermin, and that's got nothing to do with it. But if you don't spend money on the health service, you will get rats in the hospitals, and that is the vermin on that aspect of it. And I want to make that very clear.
Let me put the question another way. Feeling as you do, do you not think you ought to resign from the government?
Somebody inside this government has to protect the interests of ordinary working people because of traditional values in a modern setting, and that is what I was elected to do.
Jim Hardy, thank you very much.
32 for one and 96 now.
Wonderful. You see, the thing is, Chairman, it is part of your job to interest yourself in the details of BBC operations. We're about to confront the digital revolution.
In the middle of a test match.
My point is that nowadays the BBC has a working chairman.
Has it? Oh, good. Well, tell the fellow he has my full support.
No, no, no. What I mean is that you are a working chairman, Chairman.
Am I?
Chairman, it really is essential that you have a firm grasp of current broadcasting issues. You see, in effect, you are part of the BBC's senior management.
But, my dear man, I don't know the first thing about broadcasting.
I assure you, Chairman, that is no bar to being part of the BBC's senior management. Well, look, if you'd rather leave the more abstract issues, do you not think it would be helpful to witness some of the sharp end of broadcasting?
You mean listening to the cricket?
Well, in a sense. I was thinking you might like to spend a little time in our newsroom, watching a bulletin come out. That would include a cricket report, of course.
The newsroom. Hmm. Just remind me, isn't that where we met that rather splendid young woman?
Caroline Holland, the chief executive.
Plucky filly.
Quite. It is, of course, your job to appoint the next Director General of the BBC. It's only fair to see the candidates in action, don't you think?
Are you telling me to lay off this new Labour connection?
I'm not telling you to lay off anything. I'm just saying a bit less political theorising and a bit more hard journalism.
Yes, right.
Well, you are back here because of your unique contacts with Scotland Yard, you know. Let's use them a bit. Otherwise, we'll have to fill the bulletin with Ruddy Max Parker.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. I could have sworn I saw Max in Regent Street this morning.
No, I fear not. Max is giving us the benefit of his deathless prose from the West Indies.
Well, it can't be too Max Parker, can it? Hello. This is top brass.
No, my God. You, I don't care if you are busy. Look busy.
Yes, sir.
Good morning, Chairman.
John, if it's all right by you, the Chairman will sit in on the 1 o'clock news.
Yes, certainly. We'll be delighted.
I'm just going to take the Chairman to the World at One office, then we'll be with Caroline Holland.
I'm still not really sure what you're unhappy about. Doesn't it strike you as odd that the papers are saying what a good job we're doing, and whenever I turn on the BBC, all I get is government split, row about welfare reform and all the rest of it?
The papers don't have a duty to be impartial.
We do. Impartially, the Prime Minister has an approval rating of 83%.
Which we fully reported.
But you reported it at the end of a long piece criticising so-called government cuts and increased charges.
We carried an interview with Jim Hardy, and there was no official view on behalf of the government. But Jim Hardy's the Deputy Prime Minister, for pity's sake.
Look, all I'm saying is we want the BBC to be part of the project, to be on board.
And what I'm saying is it's not our job to be on board.
You're really not getting the message, are you, love?
And you really don't understand what impartial journalism is, do you?
You know, Martin, I find it perfectly fascinating that haute cuisine in central London seems to have adopted the presentational principles of the Big Mac.
Charles?
Well, I mean, one has one's ironic chicken Kiev.
Or one's postmodern prawn cocktail.
Exactly so. And one is then presented with a plate of mashed potato. On top of the mashed potato is some rocket. On top of the rocket, some porcini mushrooms. And on top of the mushrooms, a duck. Well, this is a Michelin-starred establishment. Yet all it would take is a sesame seed bun, and they could call it our Whopper Deluxe Duck Burger. A symbol of dumbing down, perhaps? Oh, how is senior management, by the way?
It makes heavy demands on one's time, Charles.
Martin, 1,000 apologies. I brought you here to ask you a vital but simple question. Where the hell did you get that tie?
In keeping with my status as a senior member of the BBC's management team, Charles, this is a power tie.
Solar, nuclear, or wind?
Your tongue has lost nothing of its acidity, Charles. May I remind you, gently, of course, that I am now your superior in the BBC hierarchy?
Senior, Martin. Undoubtedly. Superior, never.
Cheers. Cheers.
Martin, as you know, there is a vacancy for Director General.
Charles, how often must I tell you? The next DG will be a woman, specifically Caroline Holland.
Ah, poor dear Caroline, so helplessly embroiled in battles with the government. Unfortunate, ill-advised battles. The kind of battles that leave scars on a manager's reputation, like an incompetently erased tattoo.
Well, I understand she's coping very well.
And, oh dear, on top of this unfortunate cocktail of controversy comes a homicidal maniac, bringing back to the BBC a tarnished
tabloid reddick like George Cragg. The last thing Caroline needed at this critical stage. The time has come, Martin, to make mischief.
In view of my position, I couldn't possibly be involved in anything questionable.
You know my methods, Watson.
I damn well do. That's what I'm worried about.
Give it a month, Martin, and pure, pristine Caroline will be face first in the pit, gorging on refuse, slavering in slime, irretrievably immersed in excrement.
May I get you something else, monsieur?
And as Charles Prentice rides elegantly to the corporation's rescue on a discreetly white charger, Caroline Holland will career helplessly downhill on what I may perhaps describe as the shit-stained buffalo.
And to follow, monsieur?
You never were much of a one for the little grey cells, were you, Frank?
Little grey cells are for little grey villains, George.
Oh, the sayings of Frank Jefferson, number 31B.
Yeah.
Can't you get us in the truck, please?
All right.
Oh, come on, then. It's all this good old police work turned up.
I've had door-to-door inquiries in the street where the victim's surgery is. I've got a pathologist report on the body. I've got forensics report on the bullet. And I've had officers interviewing everybody who had an appointment with Gilbert on the day that he was murdered.
So, what's come out of all that lot, then?
Well, nothing so far, but it's all got to be done.
Yeah, I've got an update for the 1 o'clock news that's got to be done as well. Frank, see that bloke in the corner over there?
Hmm?
Does he remind you of anybody?
Well, he looks a bit like your mate, the sports reporter.
Max Parker. He looks a lot like him. He looks a hell of a lot like him. Max?
Hello, Gilbert.
Max, you're supposed to be in the West Indies.
I know.
Well, what happened?
Well, I got as far as the airport. I counted them out. And I counted them back in, and I buggered off.
Max, most reporters would give their eye teeth for winter in the West Indies, but it happened.
Well, the truth is, George, that I'm afraid of flying.
I heard you on the radio this morning from Barbados.
I hired a steel band and did it from Notting Hill Gate. Now, for the piece at 1 o'clock, I've got a little variation.
Yes. 20 great reggae classics.
Yeah, it's what the professionals call Atmos, dear boy. You doing anything for the 1 o'clock, George? It's 5 minutes too, you know.
As you can see, Chairman, every BBC journalist is a dedicated, highly trained professional.
It's been the most fascinating morning. I've no idea the news is such a complicated business.
Oh, yes. Only the very best will do for this newsroom. A BBC reporter will go to the ends of the earth to get the story.
Well, Max Parker's on with a piece from Barbados, John.
All right. Let's have a listen to it.
The cricket chappy. Splendid.
Ready in three, Max. 3, 2, 1.
I'm speaking to you from a bar in the heart of Barbados.
It looks like circus that way, Mike.
Surrounded by cricket-loving Bajans. How, their news have we sunk to this? To be outshone by an England side of great spirit, but modest ability. The spirit here in Barbados is, of course, rum. And to many around me, it must seem that losing to England is indeed rum. There is nothing for these disgruntled cricket-lovers to do but get drunk and think of sobers, to dream of Vivian Richards, and to say, ta-ra, ta-la. This is Mike Parker in Barbados.
Oh, good God. Now, that's what I call journalism.
George Craig's on with a piece about the murders, John.
10 seconds to bulletin, John.
All right, tell George you'll have to go live.
Coming up.
We've lost the light of Washington.
Well, don't worry, we'll cover it.
BBC Radio 4, the news at 1 o'clock. Police have stepped up their inquiries into the dentist murders. Downing Street has made an official complaint about recent BBC broadcasts. The BBC's chairman has defended the corporation. And England's cricketers are in a strong position in the Barbados Test match. Police inquiries into the so-called dentist murders have intensified this morning with a special unit being established under Superintendent Frank Jefferson. George Cragg brings us this live report.
I'm speaking to you from the murder investigation headquarters, which today is a hive of purposeful activity.
Don't you have time for whiskey, mate?
George.
George, 20 minutes ago, I had your editor in here demanding that I take disciplinary action. Don't you think we're both getting a bit long in the tooth for this naughty boy in front of the headmistress routine? Frankly, I've got better things to do with my life.
Like becoming director general.
What?
Oh, come on, Caroline. Everyone knows you're the chairman's flavour of the month.
Well, I won't be for much longer if he hears my star reporter claiming he's at the headquarters of a murder inquiry when he's obviously in a pub.
Caroline, there is a perfectly reasonable explanation.
There had better be. Prime Minister, are you listening?
Kenny.
Oh, damn. Marcia, you must stop this obsession with the BBC. If there are people at Broadcasting House or anywhere else trying to make mischief... Well, they're not doing a very good job, are they? Whereas you are doing an excellent one.
Oh, well, thank you, but...
the important thing is the project. And the important thing to me is to have somebody close to me who believes in the project. I mean, look at it from my point of view. The Cabinet hates my guts because I'm more popular than a lot of them put together. The Parliamentary Party hates my guts because, in their heart of hearts, half of them at least are still wedded to old Labour nonsense. And I'm the evil necessity that got them into Parliament. It gets a bit lonely up here when you think in those terms.
We know that I'm with you 100%.
Yes. Yes, and we're winning. That's the important thing. So let's have a little more self-assurance, a little less angst.
As long as I have your trust, Kenny.
Don't you worry, Marcia. I wouldn't trust you further than I could throw you. Oh, loneliness is such a drag.
Frankly, Charles, it's just not good enough. Now, I wouldn't want you to think of this as a telling off, a reprimand from your senior manager.
I should hope not.
But you do understand the purpose of this department, don't you? We are buying media development. Our task is to develop the television potential of existing radio programmes and the radio potential of existing television programmes.
Martin, I think I have a reasonably firm grasp of the brief.
Have you? Have you? Well, what do you mean by sending me this? I propose that BBC Daytime Television and Radio 4 should work on the following joint projects. I'm sorry I haven't an audience, just a minute audience with Nicholas Parsons, and ready, steady, cook the viewing figures.
Martin, I shall let into a little secret. I do not expect these programmes to get made.
You amaze me.
The purpose of my memo was to point up, to highlight the crisis facing the corporation.
Charles, this is the BBC. We're always facing a crisis, except when we're facing a grave crisis.
A new direction is needed.
Charles, will you once and for all abandon this nonsensical ambition of becoming Director General? The decision is already taken. Caroline Holland has the chairman eating out of her hand. I may say that your attempts to sour their relationship have been conspicuously unsuccessful.
Oh, Martin, Martin. So far, I have taken a few casual practice shots, limbering up exercises. Now the game begins in earnest.
Oh, God, does it?
The problem, as you so rightly observe, is Caroline Holland and her relationship with the chairman. But supposing BBC News should get wind of a scandal... a disgraceful, incriminating scandal, incriminating the chairman. BBC News gets an exclusive, but it's an exclusive about the figurehead of the BBC itself.
Pure fantasy, Charles.
No, hear me out. The decision to broadcast would have to be taken by the chief executive, our Caroline Holland. So what does she do? If she suppresses the story, she loses whatever shred of professional credibility she ever had. If she broadcasts it, what odds would you give against her ever becoming DG? Admit it, Martin. It's masterly.
There is one minor flaw in the argument, Charles. Lord Crichton Potter has never been involved in a scandal in his life. You've seen the man. The sexual scandal would be anatomically impossible.
But a financial scandal.
But the man is worth £7 million. He's even waived his salary as BBC chairman. No, Charles, Lord Crichton Potter is above reproach.
I think you will find not.
Charles, I really must insist that you forget this nonsense and concentrate on your job. Now, what about this one? A joint project between Food and Drink and the Moral Maze, working title From Neuburger to Hamburger. Rabbi Julia Neuburger debates the moral dilemmas of our age with Anthony Worrell Thompson. That's the kind of thing we're looking for. Be radical, Charles. Think the unthinkable.
Madam Speaker, when I became Prime Minister on May the 1st last year, I warned the British people that I was prepared to think the unthinkable, to take the tough decisions.
Yeah.
It is now time for the next step in the march to modernise Britain. Under legislation to be brought before this House, National Health Service patients will in future be required to contribute to the cost of their bed and board whilst in hospital. Prescription charges will be increased by £5 per item, and the cost of eye tests will be increased to £20 per test.
These are the opposition.
Madam Speaker, is it not the case that his proposals are unthinkable in the same way as the Titanic was unsinkable?
Well, look, that's pretty rich coming from a man who accuses me of soundbite politics. But he can have his soundbite. No doubt our friends in the BBC will give it maximum coverage. But this government will not be deterred from the course it has set, the course it knows to be right for Britain.
We need the backbenchers with us on this, Marshall.
Don't worry, Prime Minister. Leave the backbenchers to me.
Thank you. Yeah. Every line of inquiry will be followed. Thank you.
Oh, George, I'm up to my eyes. All right, but for God's sake, make it quick. Is this a profile of Monsieur Mallon in the Times? I am control over party. Tell us.
Look, I haven't got time for the weekend.
No. This is the bit. Listen. Marcia Mallon's parents split up when she was 10. Her father, a dentist, ran off with his receptionist, leaving Marcia's mother to bring up the child alone. Marcia was forced to leave the independent school where she had been academically outstanding and finish her education at the local comprehensive. She and her mother found themselves in straitened financial circumstances, and the father was never heard of again.
Bloody fascinating. What the hell's it got to do with the case?
Frank, we are hunting for a killer with an obsessive hatred of dentists. Here is somebody with a Labour Party connection, and a damn good reason to bear a grudge against the dental profession.
It hasn't exactly wrecked her life, has it? Isn't she supposed to be the most powerful woman in the country?
And another thing, because of her mother's experience, she's never had a relationship with a man as far as anyone knows. You say it hasn't wrecked her life?
George, you're losing your grip, mate. You should have taken early retirement when they offered it. Now, if you'll just excuse me, I'll get back to reality.
All right. And I'll get back to the newsroom and tell the nation the police are getting it wrong.
People will not agree with these eye tests because they cannot see the point. It's all very well for these Jesse-come-latelys taking over our party with their mobile phones and their mobile policies and sipping their champagne cocktails on the moon in June in a balloon up the pole round the bend in Firkin and saying it's cool Britannia and this is it with regard to this. Well, I've got news for them. No, it isn't. And that is the point.
That's about 28 seconds, and we'll top and tail it, saying meeting of the Tribune Group, can the Deputy Prime Minister stay in the government, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, what else have we got?
A piece from Max on the cricket. Didn't know it was a Piccadilly Circus in Barbados.
Oh, yeah, well, we'll have to run it. The chairman thinks he's wonderful. What's happening on this crime story?
Well, here's a man to ask.
Yeah, George, are the police saying anything useful?
God, the police are totally clueless. Don't have hardly got enough material for 10 seconds of airtime. I hope it's a busy news day for you, because you won't get much out of me.
Yeah, we're all right today. Plenty of political stuff.
Sorry, John, but this just came through in internal post.
Editor, urgent and personal. Perhaps they're going to make me Director General instead of Caroline. Mm. Exclusively for BBC News, I think you ought to know. Grave financial irregularities. Major scandal. Bloody hell, what do you make of that?
What's happening? Major scandal involving Lord Crichton Potter, the chairman of the BBC. You have a journalistic duty to expose this fat freeloader.
Maria, coffee.
John, I'm sure I don't need to remind you of BBC policy on anonymous sources.
Yeah, I know, we don't normally use them.
We don't ever use them.
But we can't just ignore it. Listen, whilst leader of the Liberal Democrats, Lord Crichton Potter abused funds given in good faith by party activists to pay for lunches at the Connaught, dinners at the Dorchester, day trips to Ascot and a fortnight in Lanzarote. And this money properly belonged to the Lib Dem campaign for proportional representation.
As it stands, that's just tittle-tattle.
About your friend, the chairman.
Oh, for pity's sake. We wouldn't run with something as flimsy and unsubstantiated as this, whoever it was about, and you know it.
So if it were substantiated, we'd take it seriously?
On its own, this is a piece of wanton, malicious gossip.
On its own, yes. I mean, it wasn't the only thing in the envelope, Caroline. There was also this photocopy of a cheque. You will see the account name is the Lib Dem Campaign for Proportional Representation.
Pay the Ritz Hotel £7,000 only.
Signed, Geoffrey Crichton Potter.
No way.
jail.
Well, I'll get a senior reporter on the story then.
Right. We may have a new lead for our later bulletins.
In that case, we may have two new leads. George just rushed off.
Well, there's been a development.
Oh, yes, there's been a development. Another murder.
Don't touch the body, Constable. Sorry, sir. Mm. Over here, George.
Oh, yeah, right, thank you.
My God.
Not a pretty sight, is it? An arrow straight through the eye. And straight through your theory about the killer as well.
How do you figure that, then?
Somebody with a pathological hatred of dentists, you said? This poor fellow with an arrow in his eye is an optician. Called Hastings.
And the government has announced an increase in the price of eye tests. This doesn't destroy our eye tests, it proves it. What time is
it? Well, obviously we can't be sure at the moment. We reckon it was during his lunch hour when he was alone in the shop between 1 and 2.
2 hours before the announcement in the Commons.
You still on about this link with New Labour?
Frank, according to our parliamentary boys, not even the full cabinet knew about this eye test announcement. The PM sprang it on them.
And you're linking all this with some poor optician getting bumped off. It could be a pure coincidence.
And it could be that the murderer is a very senior member of government.
I'll take a bow for my new constitution. Say hello to my new revolution. Smile and grin at the changes all around. Pick up my guitar and play. Just like yesterday. Better get on your knees and pray you don't get fooled again.
In the Chair was written by Mark Taverner and starred Michael Williams, Barry Foster, Hugh Laurie, Stephen Fry, John Bird, Richard Griffiths, Rebecca Frunt and Kenneth Cranham. In the Chair also featured Susie Brand, Peter Woodthorpe, Jeffrey Whitehead, Jonathan Keeble, Simon Greenall, Brian Parr, Henrietta Garden, Baron Boyd, Rachel Atkins and Harriet Katz. The music was composed by Paul Mottram. In the Chair was produced by Paul Sessinger.